So the latest consumer confidence numbers are out today, and we wanted to present to you some voices of consumers over the last month or so. These are consumers and people who comment on consumer behavior. Listen to these voices. Can you detect any confidence in here?
I'm really scared. I mean, my husband and I are looking to buy a house.
They could really make people fearful, and they're not going to spend
them. And for the consumers, consumers are going, $2 used to be for milk, now it's $4.
The economy is affecting what I can do, which affects my quality of life.
I'm at the end of my rope. I know a lot of other people are.
So voices of, let's say, lack of confidence there. And wherever you look in the economy, there's not a lot that's pretty, whether you're talking about the 400-point rise and decline over the last 4 days on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or simply looking at the credit markets, or if you're looking broadly at inflation or the slow creation of jobs, there's not a lot to inspire confidence. Joining us now is Don Peck, features editor at The Atlantic, author of a new book called Pinched: How the Great Recession Has Narrowed Our Futures and What We Can Do About It. Don, good morning.
Good morning, John.
You know, as an author myself, I'm all for clever and punchy book titles. Pinched is a great one, but this goes much bigger than just simply the pocketbook. It seems to me confidence is the broadest engine of the economy, of even civilization. I mean, if you don't have confidence, you don't take risks. You don't take risks, there's no investment. How big of a deal is confidence in your view?
Oh, it's an extremely big deal. I mean, you know, and confidence ultimately is rooted in economic fundamentals, you know, in what we're producing and how many people are working and what's happening to their paychecks. But as we've seen in the last few years, you know, confidence also becomes self-reinforcing. That happened in the housing bubble and eventually became unsustainable. And it also can become self-reinforcing after a bust in the other direction. And kind of bust thinking can be very dangerous, and it can make it very difficult to recover.
And bust thinking, you know, let me give you two snapshots. There's data that apparently all that money that the Fed freed up to create liquidity in the economy, $2 trillion under QE2, as it's called, actually ended up sitting in banks where it is today because corporations have a bust mentality and they're not going to either lend that money or put that money to work. And that's exactly mirrored in the consumer confidence numbers, which suggest that consumers are holding on to their money, reducing their debt, not spending. Both have huge impacts on the economy.
No doubt about it. You know, I wouldn't underestimate, though, the fundamental problem here, which is really a result of overconfidence throughout much of the aughts. I mean, in that period, consumers were routinely outspending their incomes. And I think, you know, to some extent, what we're seeing today is a necessary deleveraging among consumers. You know, we're a couple of years into that. It's likely to take a couple of years more. So you know, part of the issue is confidence. You know, part of the issue is consumers really do need to bring, you know, their balance sheets into line. And that's a long process.
And when you say narrowed our futures, which is in the title of your book, The Great Recession Has Narrowed Our Futures, and we're all feeling pinched. Before we talk about what we can do about it, what does that mean? I mean, we've had this sort of week of extraordinary pain and suffering over in London that perhaps has some economic dimensions. But bring that home. If you feel pinched over time, you feel powerless. What do you do about it?
Yeah, well, one of the main messages of my book is that when periods like this one stretch on long enough, they tend to create changes in society's character, in the culture, that can have a momentum of their own and can well outlast recessions themselves. Politics become meaner. It can become difficult to get big things done politically, which we sometimes need to do to get out of these periods. You can see, you know, rising anti-immigrant sentiment and the violence of the sort that we've seen in London, and whole generations change, especially young generations that are up and coming. You know, their career prospects change, their character changes as well. So one of the main messages of this book is that, you know, because these periods do have a lasting impact, it's even more important than we might initially think to try to do everything we can to hasten recovery and to get out of them faster, and we can do that if we take smart action.
If we look at history, and you write about this, the Great Depression in the 1930s utterly obliterated the culture of America that was predominant in the 1920s. Do you think the sense of I don't know how to characterize it. The sense of the bubble of the 1990s and the secondary bubble in this first decade of this century are likely to be obliterated by what's going to transpire over the next 4 or 5 years?
I do. I think that's very likely. As you said, after the Roaring Twenties, the Depression came, and we were left as a country with kind of a notion, an attitude of thrift for a generation. What's interesting is
let's point that out for a second, Don Peck. I mean, the thrift that came in the 30s did not change until after the 70s, right?
Well, right. And what's interesting about the 70s is another very weak period, but its signal characteristic was inflation. So, when you have high inflation, thrift really doesn't make sense. Your savings are lost. Debt becomes attractive because inflation eats it away. And what an up-and-coming generation of young boomers learned during the 70s was, as a 23-year-old Payne Weber economist wrote in a New York Times op-ed, take your money out of the bank and spend it. Inflation gives its all that it has to give to those who have the biggest pile of debts. Big mortgages became attractive, and that played out. That attitude, which was kind of inculcated in boomers in their formative years, has played out for the last 30 years. And so from the fruits of one crisis, or from the seeds of one crisis, we've seen the fruits of another. I think this will mark a significant turning back towards thrift. I see that in my reporting today, especially with young people, and I think it will endure for many years.
In the last minute, look back at the week that was here on Wall Street. Never happened before. 400-point moves in the Dow on 4 consecutive days. What do you think of that?
Well, it's worrying, but it reflects the fact that, again, absent aggressive action, which I detail in my book, we're not near the end of this period. We need to be taking a wide array of actions to get out of this period. Unfortunately, we're just not doing that.
Don Peck is the features editor at The Atlantic. He's the author of the new book, Pinched, How the Great Recession Has Narrowed Our Futures and What We Can Do About It. Does your future feel narrowed? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.